You're imaging that your rib cage is a series of concentric circles, and the shoulder girdle is a cape loosely thrown over those circles, and it's fastened at the manubrium. So we're giving tactile aid at the manubrium and then the same level in back. Okay, and you can do that. Now, see the circles becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. Remember, they're inside the cape, becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. Especially the first rib circle, which is at the level there of the manubrium that you're touching in front. Let them become smaller and smaller and smaller around the central axis. It's a variation on the closing of the umbrella. And then you finish off with the sternum sliding up to the atlas, which is between the ears. So touch at the temporomandibular joint right under it, behind the jaw, in front of the mastoid processes. Okay, now you can release the tactile aid, and we can all now just balance very easily on the femur heads, and we can watch the breath resting on the femur heads just as the weight does. You let the weight out of the armpits, sternum slides up toward the atlas, and the breath is resting on the femur heads. Bouncing. Okay. All right. Now we can come over and have a seat. This morning, as we did yesterday, I'm going to take you through a series of processes based on the information we have taken up. And as we go through them, I'll keep adding new things. I want to weave in new information with the old. So we'll begin with just getting on the sit bones, whatever that means to you at this point. And the head easily between the two sit bones. And the head is resting on the top of the spine at the atlanto-occipital joint here. Could you watch the spine begin to grow like a tree upward against the occiput, that is the underside of the skull. First thing you're doing is you're visualizing where it is. That is where the spine is contacting the skull. You know it's between these two points. So you get that clearly in your mind. And then as you see the support between the two ears, you let the mastoid processes in the back of the jaw melt down the sides of the neck. As that is happening, you watch the spine growing like a tree up under, taking the head up to the ceiling, if you want to see that. Doesn't matter. But these you want to see still melting downward. You just, a few moments ago in standing, slid the sternum up to the lateral-occipital joint. And this is really where they converge as an image. Everything goes up. That's just to remind you of some of the tensile forces of the length of your body, so that as you sit on the sit bone, you don't take it into collapse, but that you still have the upness. And then you can let that go into the recesses of your mind as we move on to letting the femur heads rest in the acetabula. Let that happen. And as they are resting in the little cups there, like golf balls and golf holes, let's just swallow. Just swallow to get familiar with your swallowing reflex. Now, could you imagine that the two acetabula are mouths and they swallow the femur heads? Let them swallow the femur heads. Another way to stimulate the nervous system with an image that's just a little unusual that you can play around with. Let's let the armpits soften. You might want to touch them. And if there's any weight being pulled into the armpits, if you're holding yourself up by your armpits, think in terms of releasing that hold, that weight, and let it drop downward as if you were letting the sides of the ribs slant down, fall away from the armpits. The reverse of that would be to try to pull the ribs up into the armpits, making them parallel. Let them slant the way they do by softening your armpits and letting the weight drop out. And let the weight drop out of all the ribs. No weight to be held in the sides of the ribs. The sides of the ribs are soft. By contrast, if you want to think support, think of the sternum either sliding up to the atlas or the puppeteer giving you support there. Without voluntary movement, just arbitrarily position yourself. Really try to get the experience of that. Just think it. And then later, as you get the experience, you can follow it with a gentle voluntary movement. As all this is happening, the tongue is resting in the mouth. And to help the tongue rest in the mouth, we'll touch the neck pit under here. and let it soften. Let it soften. And that lets the tongue rest in the mouth. The breath was under or over or around the tongue, but there's no tongue effort to breathe. And if you're doing that, the air will go directly into your pelvic balloon down below. As you're imagining the pelvis as a balloon, and as you inhale, the balloon will expand. Exhale, it empties out. So that the breath bypasses the tongue, really. Now, a companion image to go with this, I'm going to work now on the inside of the mouth, thinking about the roof of the mouth. Up under here, the one I'm calling the roof of the mouth, and there you have a section which we refer to as a soft palate. And quite often, we keep that soft palate tight, rigid. So to affect the soft palate and the muscles around the face and the skull, we're going to use an overall image of the roof of the mouth instead of being flattened downward as having an arch, a very high arch. We're going to see the arch coming up under the skull. Now, the way we're going to do that is to imagine a line from between the two center upper front teeth behind the gum and going up behind the nose and then on up behind the forehead and up under the skull. This is following the median sagittal line until you get to the top where the median coronal line would cross, right here, center. That, you'll imagine that the sides of the roof of the mouth narrow toward that center line as you go up to the top, and it gives you a kind of a peak, a real high peak. Of course, that's image because the roof of the mouth isn't just an arch in here. It's a nice arch, but it's here, but we're going to imagine it going up to here. So let's give ourselves some tactile aid for that. Let's take our fingers and put them on the outside of where we're imagining on the inside. You're in front of the two upper front teeth there. You're imagining that you're behind them. So you take the line on up the nose, thinking behind the nose, and behind the forehead and under the skull there. You're inside in your thought, and you get to the center point on the top of your head, and you leave your hand there, and then take the other hand and narrow in towards center, thinking of narrowing in towards the center line there. Top, and as you narrow in towards the center, the peak gets higher and higher. Now, where you're touching on the top of your head should be soft. Think it's soft, and that lets the peak, that lets you experience the inside there of the skull as having a high peak. If, when you have done that to your satisfaction, let your hand rest. If we have time in constructive rest, I want to do that having a partner give the tactile aid. It will be a little different experience. Now that, in addition to the tongue, is a marvelous set of processes to help get the head centered. I have to give you some papers now that Carol passed on to me. And then we'll continue. This is the sheet of names and addresses of the class. On the top part of the pile is page 2. On the bottom is page 1. Take one from the top, one from the bottom, and pass the pile to the person next to you. You get yours. You have yours already?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Yes, if you got any before, don't take them. And Betsy, Carol has a set for you. The other section I call the ankle foot. Now here is what the ankle foot is. The three medial toes and their metatarsals, which really abut up against the cuneiforms. And then the cuneiforms, which abut against the navicular. And then the navicular, which goes right up against the talus. So, taking the three medial toes and metatarsals and tarsal bones there, that's ankle foot. Heel foot, I'm calling the lateral two phalanges, metatarsals, the cuboid, and the calcaneus. And that's a line of demarcation between those two sections. It's very clear as you look at the top view of the foot, which is called a dorsal view, looking at it from above. And the reason that I divide it is that as I do a lot of different exercises on the foot, I think of the ankle foot as being, for the most part, the area of the foot that has the most tensile support. That is, it needs the most muscle activity in support. Mm-hmm. That's right, it's the inside three toes with their metatarsals and the tarsal bones, the cuneiforms and the navicular and the ankle bone. So that's the part that needs most of the tensile support, principally through this longitudinal arch here, where you have to have quite a bit of muscle support. Whereas in the heel foot, that's giving you most of your compression support. That's where more bone is contacting floor for compression support. So I use really only the three inner toe lines as thrust lines, because that's principally where you're getting that kind of support, that thrusting into the arch. Now, we'll do the same tactile aid that we do for the leg. We're going to do this right now on the foot, where we draw our fingers back across the toe lines back toward the keystone, which is the talus. Do that right now. Just take your fingers and run them back towards You can do it over both the top and the bottom of the foot. Okay. And then, after you've done that with your hands, the tactile aid, let's use the floor as tactile aid. Let's imagine that the foot is like a soft piece of cloth, and you're going to peel it off the floor. I'll take my sock here to demonstrate that. let's say the foot is like a soft piece of cloth, and you just peel it off the floor and then let it peel back on. Now, as you come off the floor, think back to the keystone. As you come back on the floor, think back toward the keystone. It's the same thing you've been doing when you have been taking the line of movement back into the femur socket. Let's do that on that foot for a moment. Keystone is the keystone of the arch. It's like the center of the arch. The keystone is actually in between these two ankle bones here. Okay? And they are, let's look at it on the foot again so that you see where it is. They are, see, that's where your keystone is, right here, between these two bones, right here. Now, effectively, you might be thinking of it a little forward of these actual lines here. You've got play in there. You can think of it as being a little forward here. The idea is that in order to be balanced, you don't want to be either totally on the ball of your foot or totally on the heels, because if you are, you are not in balance, and you're not really efficiently poised for quick, effective movement. The people who know this best are the martial arts, because they work with being at center. See, you never know. The idea about, I think that being on the balls of your feet, which is what a lot of physical education teaches, came from the fact that quite often you are going to move forward and you have a head start on that forward move. But you don't always know whether you're going to be moving forward, particularly, say, in the martial arts where you're in combat. You may have to move backwards. If you're already forward, then you see you're off balance. And that's what the good martial art combatants are looking for. They want to see if you're off center, and then they'll take advantage of that and use that split second that you might need to get back to center, to move backwards if you had to throw you off. So it's just a matter of trying to get your weight centered back over the keystone in the foot. Okay, let's do the other one now, just quickly, and then I want to do a little walking exercise with this. Just take the sense of the weight going back to the keystone. Do the foot peel on the floor. Just peel the foot off the floor. Now here, I'm not asking you to point the foot to make it simulate the hanging, but let it hang where it actually will hang, just to get in touch with how your foot hangs. Peel off, and then you're coming back on, thinking back to center. I think we're ready to come to standing. I'd like to take you through a little process in the standing position. That's it. Make that change nice and easy. Now, in the standing position, we're going to do, let's come out onto the floor because I want to walk with it, but first we'll do it in place. Let's come onto the floor a moment. Peel the foot off the floor and then peel it back on. Peel it off. And then back on. Okay. Now, before you continue, here's another good little principle you can work on to get better locomotion, more efficient. It's not a good idea to put weight, to start bearing weight on the foot through the leg until you come back to center. In other words, it's not a good idea to do that, usually, unless you're doing some special movement. But rather to have the weight come back to the center, and then you have the weight over it. So let's practice in place a minute, and then we're going to walk with the same principle. Let's just peel the foot off the floor, peel back on, thinking back to your keystone. When you come back in your thought and physically, then you put the weight on it again. Try it again, just simple here, and then we'll take into walk. And back, right on. Okay, now let's do the other leg, the one you didn't do before. Peel it off. Simply peel it on, taking the weight after you've come back to center with your thought and after you've had the foot come back completely on the floor and back on. Okay, now again, it's the same thing as you walk. You'll take a small step, a half step, peel off, peel on, and shift when you've peeled on mentally and physically. Okay, I'm going to walk backwards so I don't run into you, but walk forward for a while, then I'll have you walk backwards. Get a sense of peeling off and on and off and on and off and on and off and on and off and on. Peel off and on. Peel off. Thank you. there are no muscles attached to the keystone, the talus. The keystone in an arch of a building does not need any cement to hold it in place because the opposing forces buttress it very efficiently in place. And Todd maintained that the keystone of the foot, the ankle, didn't need any muscles to help maintain its position because it was a keystone. An interesting thought. At any rate, while there are no muscles touching or rather attached to the talus, there are muscles attached to the other tarsal bones, and they tend to do this kind of action. That is, it's a kind of a knitting together of the bones of the foot. That's why I have this strung up this way with nylon cords going through the bones, which they don't do in the foot, of course. But this is the kind of an effect you get. The point being that, as I see it, good muscle action in the foot is constantly aligning and realigning the bones of the foot so that it can help direct those thrusts that we worked on as an image toward the keystone, so that the foot is at all times transmitting the weight and the counter thrust of that weight efficiently. Now, when you think about it, these little slim bones, which have to handle to transmit the entire weight of the body, you have 2 feet, of course, but they're still rather small when you think about it, because they have the collective weight of the entire structure to transmit to the supporting surface. If that isn't done efficiently, there can be a great deal of stress placed on the structures. I marvel at the fact that we don't have more foot problems than we do. People complain about their feet once they begin to get in trouble, but considering the lack of attention and care we give them, I am surprised that we don't have more trouble with them than we do. So this centering action that we've been doing is the first step in trying to get a better use of the foot. What I'm going to do now is to sort of make a leap, because I want to do a little exercise with you that will help you to voluntarily maybe activate the muscles closer to the arch that help to do this knitting action. Now here's what we're going to do. We're going to relate the foot to the hand. Take your hand and put a finger in the center of the hand. I want you to lightly grasp that finger with the center of your hand, as if you're going to pick it up. Okay. Now, go down to your foot and touch what you feel might be comparable to that center in your hand and your foot. It should be somewhere in the vicinity of the ankle. It may be an inch or two forward of it even, but somewhere in the vicinity of that ankle bone, you find a spot where you feel a similar but less articulate point of contact. And we're going to call that, got it, the center of the foot. And would you now, with a very small movement, try to grasp your finger with the foot center, as if you're going to lightly grasp that finger. Very lightly. Now it's going to cause your toes to curve downward, and that's all right. But don't let the toes take over. They can work, but try to get your thinking back to the center around the arch of the foot in that area. Yeah. And then you can put the foot on the floor. Imagine a finger coming out of the floor up against that center you just found. And grasp that imaginary finger with the center of the foot, just the way you did with the center of your hand. It's a small movement. It doesn't have to be so large. You want to just get in touch with that. It's almost like trying to wiggle your ears. You know, small movement. Not something so heroic. And then pick up the finger as you grasp it. Pick it up. Okay. And again, let's pick it up. Now let's go to the other hand and put our finger in the center of this hand. You can, if you wish, use opposing hand and foot. That's okay, but I just want you to work with a set you didn't work with before. And you grasp it. And then we'll come down to the foot. We're going to do the same thing with that. Put our fingers in the center of the foot. Touch it. And a little grasping, just as if you're gonna. It's as if the finger was like a bird egg, and you're gonna grasp it and not crush it. Just grasp it. Put the foot on the floor. And now let's see an imaginary finger coming up against that center, and you're going to grasp it. And that's going to cause, as you do that, your arch to come off the floor a little bit, you see, which is fine. Very small movement. And then pick the finger up with your foot. Pick it up with your foot. Now, that little activity in the picking up is what we would add to the foot peel. In other words, when I had you do the foot peel, it was passive. You just picked the foot up, let it peel and hang where it was going to hang. But the foot in good use, remember I said it should sparkle, it should twinkle, it should scintillate. This is what helps to make it do that, so that when you pick it up, it's active. It is not dead. It's not dead weight. It needs to have a certain amount of vitality. You know, Soto and I were talking yesterday about the late Bruce Lee, who had such marvelous movement. And in particular, his foot movement was that to perfection, absolute perfection. When I watched that man move, I could see inside his shoes the foot. Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee was the great martial art. He made a lot of silly movies, but great, really great movement in them. I think you said that the highlights are available in a TV film, videotape you can buy. I would hardly commend you to that. It's his foot, you could just see it being very alive inside of his shoes. You could see that as he moved. At any rate, we're going to get up in just a minute and practice that. But before, I want to give you another piece of imagery. Since the organization of the muscles of the foot as they become highly sophisticated there, they help to maintain this arch, this longitudinal medial arch. I have a basic image, and again, I'm sort of skipping here and there to try to give you major pieces of information to use the imagery we're doing. So that I leave you with, I didn't want to leave you with just the two-dimensional image of coming back to the keystone, but with the third dimension, which is the height, which you have to see. That center has to have a height. So what I give as an image is to imagine that the center back to which you've come in your imagery is on a higher level than the heel and the ball of the foot. So that you're imaging height at that center. In other words, you don't want to think flat-footed. You want to think of the center of the foot being raised a bit. That's what the finger coming up in there is designed to do. So a lot of times, well, let's do it right now. Come to standing and we'll just put this right into imagery and practice. As you stand, remember to make that nice transition now. Smooth. Okay. As you are balanced on your femur heads, and as you see the centers of the feet that you've just experienced, you've just, and I call these experiential centers because they're not absolute, where you experience the center of your foot. Think of the fingers coming out of the floor against the centers, which tend to raise those centers as you image your heel and your ball of your foot or your toes dropping to a level below them. You want to see that. And then let's softly grasp those fingers with the centers of the feet. A little soft grasping. Very softly do that. And then you can walk around a bit with a soft grasp as you take a step. Be very dexterous about it, not heavy-handed or rigid, but just work a little bit on, it can be a little more than an image, just so that the foot becomes alive. Here is the image. We're going to imagine both the widening across the back of the pelvis and the narrowing across the front of the pelvis at the same time. It's an image I call the zipper. And the zipper of the pants, which you imagine yourself to be, comes from the pubic symphysis up to the navel. And once you get to the navel, the handle of the zipper is going to sink into the floor. Now, problem with the image is that the pants are quite tight. Maybe a pair of jeans that have been washed and shrunk, and you're having difficulty getting the zipper to zip, to bring the two front parts of the pants together. What permits that to happen is the back of the pants, the seat of the pants is elastic, so that as you struggle in your image to get the zipper to bring the two parts together, what permits it is, you see, in back, the seat of the pants constantly stretching as the zipper comes up. And it stretches a little more, and you get the zipper up a little more. And stretches a little more as you get the zipper up a little more, till finally you get the zipper to the navel level. Then the handle of the zipper sinks into the floor. That's a good way to create a balance there around the pelvis, the muscles of the pelvis, letting the muscles back and back open up or release as you bring more tone into the muscles in front. We'll do that in addition to working on the feet. Okay, take your partners, decide who goes down first. Put benches, we'll have to arrange the benches in a way that we can lie down with our legs, the calves of our legs over the benches. We're going to treat the foot as if it were modeling clay, and we're going to knead the foot. Right? It's as if you were trying to see how malleable you can create the foot. Maybe if you've made bread and you knead the dough when kneading it. As you manipulate the bones of the foot here, would you flex and extend and do a little rotation at the ankle? You can squeeze the bones of the foot together. Pull on the toes. And now finally, let's just gently pull the heel. Our partner will think of the heel getting longer. The spine getting longer. Now, let's take the lines of the movement back across those three inner toes to toward the keystone. Now, in conjunction with your partner's help, let's find the experiential center. That is where our partner's experience puts center. They can tell you where to move. Where should I move, Lisa? Okay. Ideally be that, but be back toward the tarsal area there, rather. And if you experience it a little differently, I want you to use the point that the person experiences, because that's where their muscle organization is, and you can only work with what a person is doing. So now you're touching where the person experiences what they're calling center, which is in the area there of the probably a little forward of the keystone. Now, at this point, I want you to imagine that your three inner toes begin where you're touching that center. And that they just dangle from that center. It's like pinning the tail on the donkey. This is where they're pinned, and they just dangle forward of that from the point you're touching. Okay, now, would you imagine grasping the finger with the center of the foot? Just imagine enveloping that finger with the center of the foot. Could you grasp the finger now with the center of the foot? Just grasp it the way you did earlier on your own, just as if you're going to gently grasp or pick it up. Just a small movement. All right, and then release it. Okay. Now we'll go to the other foot. Knead the foot. Flexing and extending, rotating the foot at the ankle. squeeze the bones of the foot together a bit to indicate more flexibility. And pull the ends of the toes. Now let's take the lines of movement on the toes back toward the heel. You can do that on the three inner toes. Just to get our partner back in toward the keystone. Now, let's touch under the foot here. Maybe a little forward of the ankle, but your partner will tell you where to go, where they experience the center of their foot. Each partner tells. Found the center, let the toes dangle from the center. Now image the finger of the center of the foot grasping the finger. Now actually a slight physical movement grasping the finger with that center that's being touched. If you wanted to hold on to that finger that's touching this articulate part of your foot, a little tiny bit of movement. Now you could still grasp the finger and take the foot into flexion. That is, bring the foot back towards your leg. We call that a flexion, a dorsiflexion. Actually do that. That's right. Keep grasping as you flex. One more time. Just flex as you grasp and release. Okay, now let's finish things off by going to the zipper image. Here, if you could think of the two rami at the symphysis, the pubic symphysis, bracing against each other, and then let's imagine that this whole area is the pants of the clothes that you've been working on, and see the zipper zipping up to the navel. Now we'll touch the navel here, and you watch the zipper moving up. We can touch around the symphysis. Now remember that you see the zipper zipping up with difficulty, and the back of the pants, the seat of the pants in back, stretching to permit the zipper to zip up in front. And then the head of the zipper is going to sink through the navel area down into the floor. Tactile 8 from the front. Let's give it from the back now. You want to put your hands under the pelvis and just stretch the tissue in back. Stretch the tissue in back. Play the game. Make a game out of it. You're able to zip up a little bit in front because the seat of the pants stretches in back. We'll just leave our partners alone for a few moments. Let them assimilate. Now, to get your legs off the bench, I'm going to give you a special image. Would you imagine that there's a string attached to the inside of the leg, inside of the leg, and that the string is being pulled from there, and the rest of the leg trails like a tail. And draw your leg back now with that image, and let the foot rest on the edge of the bench once you get back that far. And then the same thing with the other leg. You're pulling from the inside top of the leg, letting the rest of the leg trail like a tail, and the foot is resting on the edge of the bench. Now, when you have both legs all the way back and the feet resting on the edge of the bench, put your left hand on your left knee and your right hand on your right knee. And it's same side. That's right. Now, imagine that the femur heads are sinking deep into the pelvis. That's your support for this position. And we will move the benches away, and you'll see the legs dangling. And the support, again, is the image of the femur heads sinking into the pelvis. Now, you're going to lower one leg at a time, sliding the hand from the center of the knee back to the center thigh crease. So you think back along the leg to its center. The toes touch first, and you think back along the toe axes to the center of the foot, so that by the time the foot rests on the floor, you've come back to foot center and thigh center. Now, you want to leave it flexed. And do the same thing with the other leg. Slide your hand to the center of the thigh crease. Toes touch first, And you go back towards the foot center. Now roll over to one side or the other. And then onto your hands and knees. Sit back on your heels. Let your body be very foldable. The creases in the knees, at the knees and the thigh joints, very foldable. We'll pass a plane through the thigh creases coming out the buttocks. Okay. Now, to unfold, I'm going to ask you to hiss and watch the barges float down the back to the heels. The shoulder blades is barges floating down to the heels. Okay, hiss. And unfold. Now, let's take the image of the back half of the head sliding up as you stand on your knees. Tailbone lengthening. Bring one leg under and forward. Okay, pause a moment. You're going to push from the floor into the acetabulum as the head rises up to give you support. Balance on the femur heads. Weight resting on the femur heads. Breath resting on the femur heads. Sternum sliding up to the atlas between the ears. As that is happening, the weight is dropping out of the armpits, out of the sides of the ribs. Now, let's cycle the arms above the head, thinking up the front and down the back. And the rib cage is the umbrella. The shoulder girdle is entirely surrounding the umbrella. The umbrella is inside the shoulder girdle. The central axis of your body is the rod of the umbrella. And you're going to hiss and watch the umbrella close around the central axis inside the shoulder girdle. Hiss. You have soft elbows, and you're going to slide the scapula up over the ribs loosely, and let them drop. And again, let's just slide the scapula up over the ribs very loosely, and let them drop. Okay, help your partners onto the bench and constructive rest. Lined up with the sit bones in between. Kate, do you have a partner? Okay, first thing we're going to do is to knead the foot like a bit of bread dough. We're going to make some foot bread. As you work on manipulating the foot, you want to include some flexing and extending, a little rotation. Squeeze the bones of the foot together. And pull them apart. I pull on the toes also to take them into length. Then we can slide our hands. Let's move on now. Toward the keystone. You working on this one?
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Let's go back towards the keystone. Now, with your partner's help, let's find the experiential center of the foot. Where should I move? Is that close, or do you want me to move? Okay. Good. Think of your toes hanging, the three inside toes hanging from that experiential center. It's as if the tactile aid were holding the toes on your foot at that point. So you don't have to hold them with any voluntary effort. You can let the toes dangle. That will help to soften the foot. Now, let's imagine grasping this finger with the center of the foot that's being touched. Just imagine you wanted to get hold of that finger with the foot center. And you can imagine that the foot is a hand which will give you more thought of articulation. Because with a hand, you could really do that. With the foot, the foot is not so flexible as the hand, but imagine that it is. Okay, now, next thing to do is just to flex the foot one time, back towards the leg, and then release it. Just let go. Let it fall back into place. Now, once again, let's grasp. Very lightly grasp the finger, and as you grasp, flex the foot back toward the leg. As you're grasping, keep the grasping going. That's it. Don't lose the grasp as you go back. When you go back as far as you want to, just let the foot fall back. That's good. Do it one more time. Grasp and take the foot back. Good. And drop. Bye. One final little thing on the foot here. As you're touching the center, let's imagine that the thrust you're giving, the little touch you give is a thrust at the center of the foot. Imagine that projecting into the thigh socket. Touch the thigh socket. Just imagine that. that will help you to connect the center of the foot with the center of the thigh socket. Okay. Now we'll go. See, we got both feet, did we not? Now we're going to get the other foot. Okay. Which one do we need to work on? This one? Okay. We'll get this one centered. We're going to need this like a bit of dough or modeling clay. Do a little flexing and extending of the foot. And rotation. Squeeze the bones of the foot together. Pull them apart. Foot has remarkable maneuverability, flexibility. You can give a little tiny pull on the toes to bring them into length. Pull on the heel. Just stretch that heel very lightly. Think of the heel as an extension of your spine, so that as the heel is lengthening, it's lengthening the spine with it. Okay. Now we'll take the lines of movement back toward the keystone. Okay. And then just touch where you think the center might be. Where should we move? Where should I move? Once you find that center, let the toes dangle from the center. Let the touch keep the toes on the foot, and then you don't have to hold them on the foot with any voluntary effort. Now imagine grasping the finger that's touching your experiential center. Imagine grasping. Imagine the center of the foot enveloping the finger, wrapping around it, completely containing it. And now actually, physically, with a small movement, grasp the finger. It's going to cause your toes to curve down softly. Let that happen softly. Now, just flex the foot back towards your lower leg. Just flex it. And when you reach the amount of flexion that you want to do, let the foot fall back into place instead of taking it back under control. Now, this time grasp, a little grasping action. You're going to pick the finger up, and then with the grasping, go into flexion. And release. And one more time, we're grasping, and go into flexion. Okay. All right, let's go up and do the zipper. I'll wait for a minute. What's the first? Zipper is going to be from the pubic symphysis to the navel. Pubic symphysis to the navel. And when it gets up to the navel, the handle is going to slip through the navel down to the floor. It's just preliminary. See, you can do these images in layers. Now, let's take our tactile aid under the pelvis so that we bring in the part of the pants and back, the seat of the pants stretching. So I go under the pelvis. I'm about an inch or two below the top of the pelvis, the superior crest. And I'm taking my fingers and I'm stretching the tissue. I'm just pulling apart and back, indicating that the pants and back are elastic and they stretch to permit the zipper to zip up. But you have to do it with a little bit of difficulty, as it were. You're able to zip up a little bit as the pants stretch in back, and then a little more as they stretch in back. And then a little bit more. You keep on going up, getting a little more of the pants zipped as they stretch in back, which permits the zipper to move upward. And finally, it gets to the navel, and the handle then will sink through the navel into the floor. Assimilate. Take the ties off of our partner's legs. Now, let's imagine that there is a string attached to the inside top of the femur. Parallel to the floor, and a puppeteer is pulling it to pull your leg back across the bench as you draw the legs one at a time back across the bench. I'll take this out of the way so you don't. If possible, let your spine lengthen as that is happening. Foot rests on the edge of the bench, and then draw the other one back when you've done one. Okay, when you get both feet resting on the bench, would you then put the left hand over the same knee, left knee, and right hand over the right knee, and watch the femur head sinking deep inside the femur sockets. That's your stability. We'll move the bench away. Now let your lower legs dangle as you see the thigh sockets sinking deeper and deeper into the pelvis. And then let's lower one leg at a time, sliding the hands from the center of the knee to the center of the thigh socket. That's to help get your femur head centered. The toes touch first, and you go back along the axes to the foot center, so that by the time your foot is resting on the floor, you've come back to both foot center and leg center, thigh center. Then you can roll over to one side or the other. Hold the trunk of your body on your thighs, and I'd let the knee ends of the femur bones extend in the back of the seat of the pants spread, and think of the imaginary planes coming through the thigh creases out the buttocks. And then I'd let the barges float down the back on a river as you hiss and unfold. Hiss. Sitting on your heels. Let's imagine the back half of the head gently sliding up as you stand on your knees and bring one leg under and forward and pause. Now, get your knee in line with your second toe, and you're going to be pushing from the floor into the acetabulum. At the same time, the back half of the head is gently rising up, so that you have that sense of movement. And then you balance on the femur heads. As you get a sense of the weight resting on the femur heads, let your breath do the same thing. And you drop your breath onto the femur head so you can breathe actually against your femur heads. And as that is happening, to get a balance for tensile, see the sternum sliding up between the ears to the atlas. That permits you then to drop the weight out of the armpits and the sides of the ribs, and the sternum keeps sliding up. So you differentiate that. Now, as you're resting on the femur heads, let the experiential centers of your feet be under wherever it is you experience your weight on your femur heads. These are two experiences I want you to match up, rather than to try to be mechanical about it. Wherever you actually experience your weight on your femur heads, and wherever you actually experience the center of your foot, let the two be in alignment. They can work together, even though they may not be the exact physical centers. They're where you experience it because of muscle organization, and that's where you work from. And then you cycle the arms above the head, thinking up the front and down the back. The rib cage is an umbrella, and the shoulder girdle is over the rib cage. Okay, now the umbrella has a rod, which is your central axis, and the umbrella is going to close around the central axis inside the shoulder girdle as you hiss. Hiss. Now with soft elbows, just slide your scapula up over the ribs very easily. Very soft elbows, and slide the scapula up over the ribs softly. And then drop. Okay, we're going to be doing an improvisation now, just very short, but I want you to get an opportunity to explore using your feet. You can use any of the centering actions we did, any of the imagery. And in addition to that, as you move, see how many ways you can use your feet. How creatively can you use your feet? We're going to have some music. Danny, can you supply us with a little music? All right. As soon as we get the benches out of here, we'll do that. The xiphoid process, pointing down over the pubic symphysis, not pushed forward. If you can get them to hang that vertical.
That's a piece of licorice that goes to the ceiling on one side and the other side.
That'd be fine.
Because, you know, they're prepubescent. I mean, they don't know from pubic symphysis or anything.
Xiphoid process.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm trying to think of an image that would make sense to a 10 and 11-year-old girl.
Sure. Oh, sure.
So this should be straight.
The xiphoid process should not be pushing forward. It should be straight down over the front of the pelvis. Just pull the front of the pelvis.
But the top of the licorice can bend slightly back.
I don't know that I would actually. It could slightly, yeah. Very slightly. Very slightly.
You do want them to have an illusion of up and over.
Okay. Then let it bend slightly back. That'd be all right.
Then the barges flow this way and down on the back.
That's correct. That's correct.
I get all of it.
Yeah, that's why I say it should be slight as it bends back. Minimal. Not. One thing that can help that is to emphasize the upness of it. If it's a long up as it goes back, it's fine. If it's a short one and they jam into the lower back, then that's when it's not so good. That should do it for them. All right. Snake. Is a hand. Thank you. Thank you very much. Saw a lot of good foot movement there. Let me make one final statement here as we conclude our last tango here. We have been using the idiokinetic technique, and I gave you some identifying labels that have been used for the work. Among them, neuromuscular re-education, psychophysical discipline, psychophysiological. I gave you a list of them. And all of these are very nice and very valid and very descriptive and even accurate within their own definition. As I look at the work, I see it in a much larger light than just neuromuscular re-education or body mechanics to get the alignment better and so on. But rather, I look at it as part of that technique of life that you create yourself with. What I mean by that is that whether you realize it or not, every moment, moment to moment, hour to hour, day by day, we are all creating and recreating ourselves through the same technique that we're using in this work. That is intention, thought, desire, concept, and ultimately the actions that come out of these. So I see this technique that we're using as not only a means of improving the neuromuscular functioning, but also as a means of getting in touch with this process I've described of life, of constantly recreating our total beings through the thought, desire, concept, intention, and action. And as we begin to understand that, we can guide this process. I use the word guide because I don't think we can control it completely. We can guide it in a more constructive direction so that at the end of 5 years or 10 years and you look at yourself, you don't wonder how you got that way. You know that you did it. You created this thing you're looking at, this creature, this person. Now, this is not anything really new. I think philosophers and literary people who think have known this all along. And among them was a very great humorist. I don't know how much you're into literature, but in English literature, there's a great humorist by the name of G.K. Chesterton. And he said that by the age of 40, we all have the face we deserve. Next year, when I come out, I'm going to wear a veil. Thank you all very much. I hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you.